confrontational pressure. I think that Netanyahu is hesitant about the ground operation, but if he decides to do so, things will not be easy for his army.
Now, the world sympathizes greatly with the Palestinian people, but Israelis are attempting to influence global attention. For example, by, you know, Israeli president, presentation of a book titled The End of the Jews to convince the world that Hamas seeks to annihilate the Jewish population. Now, how do you respond to such displays? Especially in a significant security conference like the Munich conference.
I must clarify an issue by which the Israelis and the United States are trying to put pressure on us. We do not fight the Israelis because they are Jews. We are fighting them because they are occupiers of our land. Meaning if they leave our land, we will not pursue them and we will not fight them. Our battle has a political dimension that has nothing to do with the fact that they are Jews and believe in Judaism and has nothing to do with the fact that they came to Palestine or are present in other places. The real problem is that they occupied our land. The Jewish problem as a religious one is not related to our country. Rather, the Jewish problem began in Europe. They were expelled from Britain in the 16th century, and for 200 years, Jews were banned from entering. In France, they were prevented from exercising their religious rights from 1400 AD until 1808. In Spain, they were expelled and prevented from exercising their religious rights until 1982. In Germany, we know what happened. Every time the Jews fled this persecution, they came to our Muslim country. And you know that there are Jews in all Muslim countries who live in safety. The problem rose when they decided to become an occupying force, usurp our rights, and kill our people, which prompted us to resist them. Therefore, when the Zionist chief of staff talks about the end of the Jews, he is lying and trying to make excuses for a story that we did not create and was created by the Nazis. I think the answer to it is very simple. The Zionist media published pictures of him signing the missiles that were fired to kill our people, women, and children. Therefore, I hope that he changes the title of his book to say, The End of the Occupation. Yes, the occupation will end, and we, as Muslims, will certainly be able to end it. This is our religion to embrace all people of other religions. As Palestinians, we have Muslims and Christians. No one has ever talked about a crisis between Muslims and Christians in Palestine. Rather, we lived as one nation. Therefore, yes, the occupation will end, but not on the basis that the head of the Zionist entity or the Zionist propaganda speaks about. They want to make us appear as brutal people.
Thank you. That was a very thorough explanation of the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime. Now, let's talk about what's going to happen after the genocidal war in Gaza. How do you envision the end of this onslaught and now entering its fifth month without a clear ceasefire on the horizon?
There is no doubt that the occupation announced the goals of its military operation. They announced that they want to destroy the resistance of Hamas. They want to destroy Hamas, meaning the resistance. They announced that they wanted to free the prisoners from the hands of the resistance. They announced that they wanted to form an administration for the Gaza Strip, an administration linked to the regime. After about 5 months, what happened? They failed to eliminate the resistance. The resistance on the battlefield is still fighting. Every day there are losses among the occupation army, dead and wounded. They are still held captive by the resistance. The enemy was unable to free anyone alive except for what took place according to the exchange we agreed upon. They failed in trying to create a situation in which an administration in Gaza works with the occupation. They once spoke about clans and families And the families issued a statement saying that they were biased towards the resistance. They tried to talk about a civil administration to be imposed on the Palestinian people. The Palestinians announced that they would deal with it as agents of the regime. Therefore, they failed in all of their goals. They had only one thing left, and that was the attack on Rafah. Its results will also be a failure. The enemy will realize at some point that it is unable to succeed. The Americans realize this issue and therefore are trying to persuade the Israelis to accept a ceasefire. The regional countries that accepted the Israeli aggression began to realize that the resistance's victory would not serve the interest of the Zionists. Therefore, I believe that the chances of reaching a ceasefire agreement, even if they do not seem high so far, are now present, and we will do our best to achieve it as quickly as possible, God willing.
And Mr. Hamdan, you already mentioned the support for the Palestinian resistance by the Iraqi resistance, the resistance in Yemen and Lebanon. Now, I want to ask you, how does Hamas evaluate this support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? Have they, you know, slowed down the pace of the onslaught in Gaza or exerted significant pressure on Israel and Americans that support them or are complicit in their crimes to impose certain options on Netanyahu?
I think there were two impacts. There is a direct impact and there is a strategic impact. The direct impact of the Resistance Act in Lebanon forced the occupation regime to keep parts of the army in northern Palestine. This means that if this confrontation had not occurred, this entire army would have launched an aggression against Gaza. And therefore, the Israeli army's ability to confront it in Gaza would have been exhausted. Also, the resistance in Lebanon succeeded in inflicting real losses and casualties on the occupation army, and the occupation army began to feel that it might fall into additional trouble if this aggression continued. The resistance in Yemen succeeded in sending a clear message. A siege on the Palestinian people means a siege on the Zionist entity. The American administration did not succeed in dealing with the matter despite its aggression against Yemen. It has been proven that this aggression did not lead to any cessation of the resistance in Yemen, represented by our brothers in Ansarullah. In Iraq, the American administration thought that the Iraqi people, after everything they had gone through and suffered from the American occupation and the injustice they suffered, might not care about issues like the Palestinian issue. The Americans were surprised that the Iraqi people began their resistance to confirm that they were with Palestine, and thus the Americans seemed to realize that they were losing and that their losses would be reflected in Israel. Strategically, I believe that the resistance action in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq achieved two goals. The first is that it sent a message that the resistance in the region is cohesive and works together in its own way and not according to what others want. Its method is effective. The second issue is that this axis has a firm, principled position and is using its capabilities in an intelligent and wise manner and is capable of achieving results. This means that the future of the region will not be according to what the United States of America or the Zionist entity wants. Rather, we are approaching a stage that the future of the region will be according to what the people of the region want. Therefore, I believe that what was achieved strategically and momentarily was important.
Thank you so much, Dr. Osama Hamdan, member of the Political Bureau of Hamas Resistance Movement. Goodbye.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to 12th and 13th verses of Surah An-Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَأَدْخِلْ يَدَكَ فِي جَيْبِكَ تَخْرُجْ بَيْضَاءَ مِنْ غَيْرِ سُوءٍ فِي تِسْعِ آيَاتٍ إِلَى فِرْعَوْنَ وَقَوْمِهِ إِنَّهُمْ كَانُوا قَوْمًا فَاسِقِينَ
And put your hand into the opening of your garment at the breast. It will come out white without disease. These are among the 9 signs you will take to Pharaoh and his people. Indeed, they have been a people defiantly disobedient.
فَلَمَّا جَاءَتْهُمْ آيَاتُنَا مُبَصِرَةً قَالُوا هَذَا سِحْرٌ مُبِينٌ
But when there came to them our visible signs, they said, this is obvious magic.
Here, in this verse, the Almighty Allah talks about 9 signs or miracles that are among the miracles that Moses ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam brought before Pharaoh, else he had some other miracles too. By the way, this miracles that he was aided with from the side of the Almighty Allah can be counted to different individual characteristics of miracles. Because when his rod became a serpent, it was actually 1 miracle. And when the serpent changed back into rod, it could be accounted as another miracle. But the Holy Quran considers all these procedures as one side of a miracle. Now, Prophet Moses had 9 miracles to prove his infallibility and to prove that he was from among the prophets of the Almighty Allah. The white hand and the shining hand of Moses. The second one is the conversion of the rod into a giant serpent. The violent storm for the enemy was another one. The locust, which dominated their farms and their trees. One plant pest agent, which exterminated cereals. And it is called in Arabic Qummal, which we will refer to in a couple of verses. The forges, which emerged from the Nile River and made people's lives miserable and also full of difficulties. Blood and kind of nose bleeding, which signifies the universal counteraction of nose bleeding or the turning of the Nile into the color blood. Famine and drought. And the last one is the splitting of the sea, which you might be all familiar with. There are also other miracles mentioned for this prophet, Moses, ala nabiyyina wa alihi salam, but I assume that would suffice for now.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran
by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, dear listeners, as you were with us discussing the 12th verse of Chapter Naml, we said that in this verse, one big and enormous miracle is mentioned. وَأَدْخِلْ يَدَكَ فِي جَيْبِكَ تَخْرُجْ بَيْضَاءَ مِنْ غَيْرِ سُوءٍ. If you put your hand down in your bosom, it will come forth white and shining. مِنْ غَيْرِ سُوءٍ. It shines, but it does not harm anyone. فِي تِسْعِ آيَاتٍ إِلَى فِرْعَوْنَ. This is the first one. This is among the 9 signs to Pharaoh. We mentioned all different 9 miracles of Moses against Pharaoh and his people. And there are also other miracles for Moses. The 12 springs that emerged and somehow gushed from the stone. And also the descending of Man and Salwa, which we will refer to. And also we have discussed in a couple of other verses in different chapters. Anyway, referring back to this verse, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam regarding this has said that the purpose of the phrase min ghayri su, that the verse says وَأَدْخِلْ يَدَكَ فِي جَيْبِكَ تَخْرُجْ بَيْضَاءَ, put your hand down in your bosom and it will come forth white and shining. Min ghayri su, this is one of the conditions of that shining, that whiteness. And Imam says that the purpose of this phrase min ghayri su is that this whiteness of the hand was not because of the sickness of leprosy. Anyhow, the second miracle of Moses, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, was given to him. And the verse says, put your hand down in your bosom. It will come forth shining and white without harm. Now, this whiteness of the hand, which is an interesting shining and luminosity, which was unprecedented till that era, and not as a result of leprosy itself, denotes to the existence of a miracle, not just a normal, an ordinary miracle, but an extraordinary event. And afterwards, Moses, ala nabina wa alayhi salam, is granted some more grace, which we will discuss in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and is when faith begins.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Tonight's talk is called The Mark of the Mu'min. The Mark of the Mu'min. So brothers and sisters, as you know, what we're doing is going over a book to reteach ourselves Quranic aqaid, our belief system as taught by Quran, right? So Quran or Islam, unfiltered, raw. What happens is, it's been over 1,000 years of misinformation and propaganda that we're pushing back against. Many Islamic concepts don't seem real to us. Although we love the Quran, we believe in the Quran, we believe in Ahlul Bayt, but real Islam as is, many times for us it'll seem it's a little too extreme. Brothers and sisters, if you can join me with looking at your Qurans at Surah number 8, the verse says this, Fattaqullah. So have taqwa of God. Be wary of Allah, right? Back to our verse. Fattaqullah wa aslihu dhata baynikum. And reform matters amongst yourselves. Another instruction from God. One of them, we talked about taqwa before, what taqwa actually means. But the other idea is amongst yourselves, not bickering, picking fights, not being forgiving. Aslihu. So, what does this mean? Brothers and sisters, one of the things that we're not supposed to do is to lose focus on the true enemies of Islam and start turning all of our hatred and our anger to our fellow believers. There are some people who are like this. They'll make a mountain out of a molehill. They can't forgive a mistake. They're ready to go to war. But at the same time, you'll find that this person who is so angry and so worked up and so warlike, and I don't back down from anything and I tell it how it is, you'd be surprised. Sometimes these individuals have nothing to say when it comes to the Yazid of the time. And again, brothers and sisters, when we're going over these ayat of the Quran, the idea is introspection, not finger pointing, not now I leave the session, now I go over and say, myself, better myself. What is Islam? Islam, brothers and sisters, anybody who says shahadatain is a Muslim. Anybody who says shahadatain, Muslim. This person is a Muslim, for sure. Does that mean we have iman? We're mu'mineen, according to Quran. Or is there a difference between Islam, saying the Shahadatain, and Iman, that lofty position with God? So, brothers and sisters, if you can turn to a verse of the Quran. This surah is surah number 49. So let's see if the sisters get it before the brothers. Surah 49 and verse number 14. Anybody who has it, let me know. Brothers, okay. Brothers won this time, inshallah. All right, so let's see if you can read along with me. Surah 49, let's read what God says in the Quran. قَالَتِ الْأَعْرَابِ. So the Arabs, the Bedouins, used to say this. Amanna. We believe. Amanna. What did God say for the Prophet to say in response to those who made declarations and said that we are mu'mineen? Amanna. God said this. قُلْ لَمْ تُؤْمِنُوا. You don't believe. It's possible for somebody to say the Shahadatain and not be considered a mu'min according to Quran. Because God in the Surah Anfal is going to define a mu'min according to Quran. He says, so instead of saying that you are mu'mineen, say this. Walakin qulu, say this. Aslamna. We're Muslims. We've submitted. Walamma yadkhul al-iman fi qulubikum. But faith, Iman, has not yet entered into your hearts. So there is a possibility of someone being a Muslim, but still, that lofty rank of Iman. Brothers and sisters, when I share these verses with you, you'll see what it is God grants the mu'mineen. That's just not any sort of person. Iman is going to be something that demands something from us. The actions of a mu'min will be different from than the actions of a non-mu'min according to Quran. So, we're going to look now at the verses of the Quran. So the verses of the Quran, this is now, if you can follow along with me, so you still have Ali Imran, let's continue with our verses of the Quran. Now we're finding out who a mu'min is according to Quran. By the way, someone who's a mu'min, let me just, the end of the verse, so we'll speed forward. Surah 8, again, surah Anfal, verse number 4. What are these mu'mineen like? What does God give them? Why is this so special? So let's speed forward a second and we'll go back to the definition of iman. Brothers and sisters, do you see? Same surah 8, verse number 4. Yes? All right. Over there you should see this. Ula'ika, the people who have these five traits, we're talking about must-have traits for iman. The people who have these five traits, ula'ika, those people, humul mu'minuna haqqa. They are the real mu'mineen according to Quran. What do they get? Lahum darajatun inda rabbihim. These individuals have darajat, they have ranks inda rabbihim at their Lord. Wa maghfirah. That divine maghfirah and forgiveness that we talked about, these are the people who get it. Wa rizqun kareem. And that noble provision. They have paradise in this world and the next. So that's those mu'mineen. Now, back to our verse. Our verse, brothers and sisters, we're now defining what iman is according to Quran. God says this. Wa ati'u Allaha wa rasula. And obey Allah and His Messenger. In kuntum mu'mineen. The first sign of faith, according to the Quran, and obey Allah and His Messenger in kuntum, if you are mu'mineen. In kuntum mu'mineen. So, brothers and sisters, it's a very clear definition. God wants to see obedience. It doesn't matter what the responsibility is, that's not mentioned over here. What does God want? Obedience. Whoever is a mu'min obeys God. Right? Verse. Wa ati'u Allaha wa rasula. Obey Allah and His Messenger. In kuntum mu'mineen. So brothers and sisters, as you see, this definition is very straightforward. It's not complicated. It's common sense. Imam Sadiq taught us about common sense before. Al-aqlu ma'ubida bihir rahman. Aql is that through which the Rahman, God, is worshipped. Waqtusiba bihil jinan. It leads us to paradise. Right? So it's very straightforward.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Economic divide.
As the U.S. Israeli genocidal war completes its fifth month, economic indicators on the West Bank show a dismal performance. Strangled by Palestinian worker restrictions and the Israeli regime holding to Palestinian Authority tax revenues, well, the future looks dim, especially since the violence continues in the occupied West Bank. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahweh. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, we will take a look at the warning that was issued by the World Bank when it came to the West Bank economy. Now, one of them is cross-border wages, $5.5 billion that's been affected by what's going on in the West Bank. That is obviously a big worry for the Palestinian economy. Next, one of the factors that has contributed to this is the Palestinian Authority's tax money being withheld. Israel collects that money. The funds withheld is something that affects the economy of Palestine. And this is money that pays 143,000 workers to go spend it. But if they don't have it, how can they do that? Next, the Israeli West Bank aggression. Over 400 Palestinians have been killed. Violence continues almost on a daily basis. And these two factors obviously impacts the economy not only of Israel, but also of the occupied West Bank. Israel's genocidal war on the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the regime's daily atrocities in the occupied West Bank has devastated Palestine's economy. Apart from the catastrophic human losses, the onslaught has resulted in the destruction of tens of thousands of housing units, with over 1.2 million individuals currently without homes. A report by the World Bank says gross domestic product of the Gaza Strip plummeted by 80% in the fourth quarter of 2023. While the GDP of the West Bank also fell by 22%. For the Gaza Strip, the combination of pre-existing high levels of poverty, widespread internal displacement, the destruction of homes, fixed assets, and productive capacity, coupled with a massive economic downturn, realistically means that nearly every resident will live in poverty, at least in the short term. North Gaza infrastructure is heavily impacted, with over 62% of all roads damaged or destroyed. Primary roads bear the brunt, with 92% affected, almost 60% of which are destroyed. Secondary roads also face severe damage, with just over 60% rendered unusable. On the energy front, almost 62% of the Strip's electricity feeder lines are damaged or destroyed. During the early stages of the onslaught, Israel turned off the supply of electricity to Gaza. Time now for our online media post. First up, taking a look at what was posted on X at World Bank has said latest analysis on the economic impact of the conflict on the Palestinian economy shows that the GDP dropped by over 80% in the Gaza Strip and 22% in the West Bank. That's for Q4 2023. We then went to a website. Israel's war in Gaza is strangling the West Bank's economy. Went on to say in the West Bank, the GDP has fallen by 22%. Unemployment has skyrocketed to 30%, up from 14% before the onslaught. Well, they call it the war. We call it the onslaught. Also saying because of the supply chain bottlenecks, prices are going up, then incomes are lower, and the demand is shrinking. Next, an issue that we have paid more attention to later on in the program, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen urging Israel to restore economic ties to the West Bank. She said that she had called on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel to reduce barriers to commerce for Palestinians. Then we took a look at another website. It said the Gaza war, again, they call it war, we call it an onslaught or aggression, turns the West Bank into an economic time bomb. Went on to say Israel's decision to ban cross-border workers and block Palestinian funds has pushed the local economy to the brink of collapse. And we squeeze in one more. The World Bank warns on the dire state of the Palestinian economy because of the continuing war and its effect on employment and consumption on the West Bank. The Palestinian Authority finds itself in a spiraling fiscal crisis, which could only cope with by increasing arrears of payments and through foreign aid. Shows how bad the occupied West Bank's economy is doing. All right, let's bring in our guest for our first Q&A of the program. Joining us is Oliver Boyd Barrett. He is the Emeritus Professor of Ohio and California University. He's author of many books, such as The Conflict Narratives in Syria. Oliver Boyd Barrett, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at the, warning that was issued by the World Bank on the dire state of the Palestinian economy, also on the Gaza Strip. Both are not doing well. There isn't much hope for recuperation at this point. We're wondering how long this is going to take, because the onslaught as we speak is still continuing. And what do you think about the future of the occupied West Bank, given the fact that you have the aggression in the Gaza Strip and the violence that's on a daily occurrence there in the occupied West Bank?
One thing is absolutely for sure is that the gravity of the situation is unprecedented. The situation is extremely grim. As I think you just mentioned, we've seen a fall in the Palestinian economic activity of something like 80% in the last quarter. We have seen a total fall off in the work permits that would be available for Gaza workers in Israel, and we are seeing that on the West Bank, Palestinian workers are no longer being allowed to work on the settlements and on other construction activity.
You mentioned construction activity. I want to interrupt you there because we keep hearing about that in terms of how Palestinian workers are not permitted to not only work there, but how much they contribute to that sector. Can you expand a little bit more for us as to how that stands in terms of their contribution to the construction sector?
The construction industry in Israel is very, very badly hurt. And Palestinian workers have typically provided 65 to 70% of the labor on Israeli projects, including on the settlements in the West Bank. So there's absolutely no, it's absolutely clear that the extent of the damage to the Palestinian economy is immense.
All right, thank you for that. At least you gave us an idea there. Let's bring in our next guest, Gabriel Soares. He served in the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program in Palestine and Israel in Hebron and Jericho. Gabriel Soares, welcome to Economic Divide. The economy of the West Bank is in trouble. You've got 170,000 Palestinians that have been taken out of the economy because of the Israeli regime preventing them from coming to work. A decline in consumption as a result. You have a reduction in the tax revenues is another example as a result of that restriction. And this is money that Israel collects on behalf of the PA. How could there be any hope for the West Bank economy when you have those types of practices by the Israeli regime? And what are we looking at when it comes to the future when there's such violence happening in the occupied West Bank as a whole?
The situation in the West Bank was already suffering from the since the beginning of 2002, there has been a stepped up in violence and restrictions with the new government. Settler violence was very much a problem with Palestinians, both that in their own places, like in the agriculture, having their lands taken or restricted, or even their harvest being stolen or burned by Israeli fanatical settlers. And also the restrictions for even working inside those big settlements, those Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And of course, the dependency that they have on the remittances from both in the government sector, but also from outside. So it's very much a captive economy, as I said before, which it limits the prospect for freedom. There has been many different World Bank reports that the restriction and the takeover of land by Israel takes a lot from the potentials of the Palestinian economy everywhere in the West Bank.
It's time now for the InfoNews section of the program. First up, Argentina's economy. Well, we picked that last week, actually, so let's see what we got for you this week. This one is due to the cash that it's requesting from the IMF. Now, the Latin American country already owes the IMF some $44 billion. And this is not good news because one of the reasons is that Argentines are blaming austerity measures for Argentina's worst economic crisis in two decades. The austerity measures, cutting jobs, does not help contribute to the wheels of the economy to move forward. So subscribing to the IMF again for Argentina, that's not going to be good news. We'll have to wait and see. Next up, the financial system of the West is under the spotlight for the Russian president. He said that it's destroying its own financial system, according to Vladimir Putin. Policies enacted by the U.S. and the EU, according to him, have discredited Western banking and its currencies. Next up, we go to news from the continent of Africa, in particular Sudan. Its economy has contracted 40% as this war there is raging on. State revenues has dipped by over 80%. The economy is continuing to shrink by about 20%. Projected for the year 2024. Next, another economy that we picked is India's economy. Now, it may have done well. The GDP has grown quite a bit, but it's masking economic challenges. The amount of growth was substantial for the year 2023, about 7.3%. Yet the private sector response was disappointing, and disinvestment increased. And that's pretty major for India. The amount of the increase was almost 29%. So that's not good news for the Indian economy. Now, to sustain this growth, the forthcoming Indian government must tackle rising inflation and economic challenges overall. But rising inflation is something they have to watch out for. Well, those were the topics that we picked for the InfoNews section. If you have anything in your mind, in wherever part of the world that you're at, do send them to us. Contact information is coming up.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The economy of the West Bank, when you take a look at it, is one that operated under a siege. Income disparities, as an example, between Palestinian economy and that of Israel shows just that. Well, now with the onslaught, that situation has become worse, much worse. Let's take a look at some of the contributing factors. First up, we're going to take a look at the labor restrictions. Why not start with that, which has dealt a financial blow to the Palestinian economy. Israel has restricted laborers, the number 175,000. As a result of this restriction, wages of these workers accounted for $5.5 billion annually. Well, that's been taken out of the economy of the West Bank. It contributed to about a third of the combined economy of both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Next up, we take a look at another factor which prevents money from flowing into the economy, the withholding of the Palestinian Authority's tax revenues by the Israeli regime. Those revenues collected by Israel on behalf of the PA amounted to around $188 million monthly to pay 150,000 employees. Now, as an example, Israel had withheld $275 million, as you see there, for the year 2023 in these tax revenues. That includes cash collected for the prior months that was still with Tel Aviv. But only in the February of this year, and that's not that long ago, they released $114 million. This is how Israel sways control over the PA. Next, let's take a look at what has occurred in the GDP contraction area when it comes to both the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. For the Gaza Strip, minus 80%. I mean, it's just incredible. Of course, shouldn't be that much of a surprise. You have 60 to 70% of the buildings there that have been decimated by the Israeli regime forces. When it comes to the occupied West Bank itself, minus 20%, and that's a good drop considering what is happening there in the West Bank, which we're going to get to in a second. But this contraction could even be a lot worse. Let's take a look at why I'm saying this contraction could be a lot worse. Next up, we'll show you the different areas that we picked in terms of the crisis that's ongoing in the West Bank. You have the Palestinians killed as of October 7th to amount to 412 so far. Taking a look at the Palestinians that have been arrested, 8,000. Some figures put that as high as 10,000, and that's a lot. That's from October 7th, mind you. And then homes that have been demolished is another factor showing the crisis that's ongoing there, 200. This is a figure that the UN has released, including the numbers that have been arrested. So that's what's happening in the occupied West Bank. The other thing that we need to look at, and this is on a side note, is because of the Operation Al-Aqsa flood, we're going to see what I'm talking about in this next pointer here, if we can take a look at that, is the rising popularity of Ismail Haniyeh and Hamas in general. In the West Bank, it used to be at around 12%, but now the popularity of Hamas has almost quadrupled to 42%. So it shows how Operation Al-Aqsa flood, in terms of its aim, has actually gained more popularity in the West Bank. And that's very important moving forward in terms of what's going to happen in the West Bank. Well, let's take a look at an overview of what challenges the West Bank faces. And these are just general in nature. Economic crisis is obviously one of the things that the West Bank is facing. A contributing factor to that is the conflict that's entailed there. We talked about the demolitions, about the abductions, and also the number of Palestinians killed. Financial challenges, one of the big ones, such as the PA tax revenue being withheld, and also movements, restriction of Palestinians in general, leads to some of the major challenges that the West Bank is facing. Let's bring back our guests and see what they think about all this. We have Oliver Boyd Barrett rejoining us, Emeritus Professor of Ohio and California University, author of many books like Conflict Narratives in Syria. Oliver Boyd Barrett, welcome back to Economic Divide. I'd like to zoom in on an announcement slash warning that the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen actually issued against Netanyahu, where she said that he needs to take steps to prevent the collapse of the West Bank economy. As far as I recall, the U.S. has almost a direct hand in contributing to the West Bank economy, not in favor of the Palestinians, such as settlements, the freedom of movement. Indirectly, these are financially supported by the U.S. So isn't the U.S. Actually responsible in some regards?
Yeah. I think essentially Robert Kenneth, RFK Jr., recently got it right when he described the role of Israel for the United States is as a kind of aircraft carrier is the term that he used. So for the United States, I think he has this right, Israel is a kind of permanently anchored aircraft carrier, and its purpose is to ensure that U.S. foreign policies in the Middle East are carried out, and that U.S. hegemony is sustained, and that efforts to resist or to compete with U.S. hegemony are suppressed.
All right, let me stop you there and ask you about if you can elaborate a little bit more about what you mean by that. I mean, when you say, for example, that Israel carries out U.S. interests in the region, what exactly is Israel doing for the U.S. that the U.S. is so keen on supporting Israel all out in almost everything, if not everything?
The function, once upon a time under the Shah of Persia, this was the function for the United States that Iran once played. Up until the revolution of 1979, when the role that that Iran had once played for U.S. empire was shifted to Israel, and I think that is the fundamental purpose of Israel to the United States. But of course, there are now this relationship is now consolidated. By the financial links between Israeli or Israeli-friendly oligarchs in the United States and the Israeli regime, and the voting importance of pro-Israeli sentiment in particular for the Democratic Party in the United States. The relationship between Israel and the United States is extremely complicated, and it basically favors Israeli and not Palestinian interests.
All right, thank you for that. Let me bring in Gabriel Suarez, bring him back. He served in the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program in Palestine and Israel in Hebron and Jericho. Gabriel Suarez, welcome back to Economic Divide. The way that the U.S. is almost steering the post-onslaught scenario is now quite evident. We know that the U.S. President Joe Biden wants a reformed PA in place, and then we have now Janet Yellen, for example, the Secretary General coming out, I'm sorry, the U.S. Treasury Secretary coming out and saying and warning Israel that it needs to take control of the West Bank economy, put it back into gear, make sure that it doesn't fall apart. Why do you think she has done that? Do you think it's because this becomes an existential threat to Israel if the West Bank economy falls apart?
I mean, it's a kind of a bargain, because at the same time they want to allow the settlements to try to expand to do anything from Israel to maintain control of the West Bank. There is a direct control over Area C, which is 60% of the West Bank. The major resources, the water is controlled by Israel. More than 90% of the water in the West Bank is controlled by Israel, while less than 20% goes to the Palestinians. And so there is a takeover and the U.S. has been part of that during the Oslo Agreement. It has broken that takeover by allowing Israel to do what it wants, but when Palestinians try to go to the U.N. or try to move towards pressuring Israel, it always backed Israel completely. So basically completely a diplomatic immunity towards violations that are pretty clear against international laws in every single sense of the word. In every major organization can agree on that.
The private sector in the West Bank and Gaza is estimated to have suffered losses of around $1.5 billion in production during the first 2 months of the conflict, equivalent to $25 million in losses per day. Before the onslaught, the World Bank had projected growth of 3.2% in 2023 for the economies of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank combined, but its updated estimate is economic contraction of 6.4%. This means a loss of $2.5 billion when it comes to its GDP. The Palestinian Authority has also been hit hard. Its independent revenues fell 10% in 2023 in comparison with estimates before the onslaught, and it would appear that the situation is only getting worse. Its deficit has grown fivefold to over $500 million, and it is already cutting its employees' pay drastically. Israel has also canceled work permits for over 170,000 Palestinian workers, which has weighed heavily on demand in the West Bank. The West Bank economy is mainly driven by the cities in which there have been the most confrontations, including in Nablus, and which are under constant military raids from Israel.
The economy of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and Palestine as a whole will not have any chances of a real economic recovery unless the broader Palestinian problem is resolved. The occupied West Bank's downward economic spiral has not even gained momentum. Now, the U.S. knows this, which is why it has ordered Israel to make sure that that does not happen. Because if that happens, if the West Bank becomes anything even close to what's happening there in the Gaza Strip, well, that would prove to be an existential threat to Israel. It was great having you with us, and I hope to see you next week. From me, Kaveh Tawi, and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until then.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints. I'm Hadi Saravi, your host. Welcome and thanks for listening. I am with our guest speakers, dear Brother Ali and Sheikh Rouhani, thank you for being here. And thank you for giving this time to us, to this program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. You see that every day and every moment has its own values. You know, we see that. For example, every moment, every second we live is valuable. And the same story is true when it comes to days and months of the year, among which some of them are of greatest values. For example, we have Rajab, we have Shaaban. These months are so valuable, so precious. We can, that every second of it counts. And, you know, and Ramadan, as I said, is a month in which you're invited to a feast. This is a very famous quote. And the host is the Almighty Allah. What are the best things we can do to appreciate these? Some people say that read a lot, think about, or, you know, for example, some different ideas. What do you think is the best thing to start, to begin?
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, in the holy month of Ramadan, we are told that, of course, in fasting, sometimes we think that okay, fasting is just this, that you should not eat and drink something. You just control your stomach. You know, which is not true, you know.
No,
fasting means that your eyes should fast, your ears should fast, your tongue and mouth should fast, your legs, feet should fast, your hands should fast, your mind, your brain should fast, you know. Everything
but fasting
should fast.
Is controlling.
It's controlling, yeah. So the very, the simplest controlling is not to eat and drink. It is the simplest level of controlling, which is for ordinary people, for normal people. But for the great servants of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, there are lots of other kind of controllings. That is difficult, you know? That is why if someone can control his bad desires, his evil desires, his evil mentality, he is the one who is performing the major jihad according to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The Prophet told his companions that when you, for example, go to the battlefield and sacrifice your bodies, your soul for the sake of Islam, that is minor jihad. The major jihad is to control your nafs al-ammara bisu. That is why, respected brothers and sisters, we should know that fasting is a kind of preparation for getting closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is again for the benefit of us, not for the benefit of anyone else. Then Islam is the religion of purity, of purification. Islam is the religion that focuses a lot on purity. Islam tries its best to purify our bodies, our soul, our mentality from any kind of bad things. As Islam tells us that you have to wash, for example, your hands, your face, your body whenever you go for praying. Five times a day you have to, for example, wash yourself, to clean yourself, clean your body. At the same time, we have a kind of